The Committee on Early Childhood and Youth Development will come to order. And first is, oh, they're not on?
Well, no, they're turned down.
Oh, thank you. Are they? They're loud enough now? Okay. Representative Lane moves the minutes from yesterday. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. Carries. Representative Russo. And the chair will move House File 2176 and that it be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Russo, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm bringing this bill to, I was asked to carry this bill because part of the bill involves a school in my district, and it also happens to be a school that one of my children attended. The bill pertains to Montessori schools that are certified by the AMI, and Oak Hill is the school that's in my district. It's one of 12 Association Montessori International accredited schools in Minnesota. HF 2176 relates to early childhood education in AMI accredited schools in Minnesota. It amends the Minnesota statutes 2012 section 245A.03 subdivision 2, proposing coding for a new law in Minnesota statutes chapter 124D, in which it would exempt AMI accredited schools in Minnesota from the Department of Human Services licensure under Minnesota statute 245A and move that oversight to the Minnesota Department of Education. It would require these schools to obtain approval to operate from the Department of Education. It would maintain the health and safety, food and water, care for children with special needs, emergency and accident reporting, food and water, and facility requirements that early childhood facilities are subject to, and also maintain requirements for background checks on all employees, volunteers, and contractors. It maintains compliance with state and local fire codes, and it would require a three-year plan for each AMI-accredited school that falls under it. Currently, the schools that are accredited by AMI have some difficulty in fully implementing the Montessori curriculum and meeting AMI's standards, which are quite rigorous, and providing that Montessori education to children and still be able to fit within the dual regulation they have. Because these schools, when they have infant or toddler programs and preschool programs, are in the same building many times with elementary programs through sixth grade or even through eighth grade. And so those schools are always falling under the MDE. And then they also have to report to DHS currently. They end up spending a significant amount of time meeting the requirements of both of those agencies and doing the paperwork for both of those agencies and reconciling the forms that need to be filled out for both of those agencies. There's some precedence for this because there are K through 6 schools that have preschool programs that are being supervised by MDE also. As a parent, I investigated quite a lot of different educational opportunities for my own children, and they ended up in Montessori schools through their grade school years. All of them did that through the sixth grade. They were in two different schools. And one of the things I know is that the word Montessori comes from Maria Montessori's name. It's not trademarked or licensed or under anybody's control. So anybody can put the name Montessori on their school, and it would be up to parents to have to figure out if that's a quality program or not. However, within Montessori schools, the AMI is recognized as one group that if your school is accredited by the AMI, it's been held to very rigorous standards. They have inspections of their schools, a complete curriculum that schools need to adhere to, and it's very well known in the Montessori world as maintaining the highest possible standards for Montessori schools. I have with me several testifiers. I've got Renee Campion, who's the head of school at Sunny Hollow Montessori in St. Paul. Liza Davis is the director of special programs at the Montessori Center of Minnesota and the former head of school for Cornerstone Montessori and Cornerstone Montessori Elementary School. Kathy Anderson is the head of school of Oak Hill Montessori in Shoreview, where I am. And Connie Black is the director of outreach programs at the Montessori Center of Minnesota. I can briefly walk you through the bill. I know that you have limited time, so this is going to be a very, very, very fast.
Fairly quickly, yeah.
Yes. The beginning, the first page, outlines the things that I mentioned before, that the school would be moved to oversight by the MDE, that they would need to apply for that, they'd need to be approved by it, they would need to have a 3-year plan, and they'd have to follow all the health and safety regulations. On page 2, it covers background checks, and at the second half of page 2, the commissioner of MDE would have access to be able to come in and inspect the schools. The bottom begins the exclusion from licensure. That there's no changes on page 3, and then or page 4 when we get to the very end on page 5, it just adds an additional subsection to that list of programs that are excluded from licensure. It would add the Montessori Early Childhood Program that's approved under the section that was previously outlined. And with I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Urusso. And you mentioned that a school is in your district. I noticed in the handouts I was given beforehand when they came to my office that the first school listed is Brightwater, which is in my district. So apparently they're relying on the first school is in my district. And actually, it's right up by Ms. Teske, who's working with the group, lives very close within a few blocks of there. So
great. That may be just alphabetical order.
Oh, it couldn't be. It must be the best one. Okay, Ms.
Right,
Campion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Urusso. I am Renee Campion, head of school at Sunny Hollow Montessori in St. Paul. My colleagues Liza Davis and Kathy Anderson are here today representing 12 Minnesota schools recognized by the Association Montessori International, which is an international organization founded by Maria Montessori to preserve and uphold the standards she put forth in her method. We come to you today as educators of children 8 weeks through eighth grade. As members of this committee, you're well aware that education doesn't begin in kindergarten. In fact, the human brain is the most active in the period before that, from birth to age 6, when the child's mind is like a sponge, soaking up all of the world around them, language, using their hands and all their senses to take in information, and then ordering it and classifying those impressions. It's during this time that the children construct the foundation of their personality and become a member of their society and culture. All that the child creates in that first 6 years is a springboard for their future growth and development, and Montessori supports this development. We have a video clip for you today. It's taken from a film that's being produced called Building the Pink Tower. It's a short clip, and so we'll start that now.
Maria Montessori was actually a medical doctor. So the method actually evolved based on her observations. She had watched children very carefully and scientifically. Each moment in a child's life is a very critical part of their development, and we create intentional environments that meet the needs of those different age groups.
Everything you see in the environment is meticulously designed to meet how the child learns.
It's that sort of balance of expectations of the child and also giving the child their own space and to learn at their own pace that I think is, you know, super important.
The pink tower, the movable alphabet, the beads,
that you talk to Montessori alumni and they all have these same shared tangible experiences with the materials that stay with you your entire life.
The materials are so adaptable and they fit so many different learning styles and they're based on the fundamental ways humans learn. I think that's one reason why Montessori works so well within diverse communities is because we accept each child for who they are, and I think that's also something that parents respect.
They are very busy and they don't have to sit one place and all day.
When they come into the environment, we try to empower them.
Everything is designed in a way they can function independently. We try to guide the children rather than teach them.
They are given the opportunity to concentrate, to fall in love with the materials.
We're not just fostering cognitive development by interaction with these developmentally sequenced materials. There's also amazing social and emotional development that goes on in there as well. At every stage in Montessori, there's an experience of community. And that means things like mixed-age environments and having children who are older, helping, assisting, teaching, fostering things, and children who are younger.
We don't have time for the rest of the clip, but while we talk, there'll be pictures of children in the classrooms using the materials and working together. I want to highlight from that clip the fact that this is a scientific method. It was developed using observation, and it through those observations, Dr. Montessori came to identify the environment, the materials, and the training for adults that would provide the optimal conditions for children to develop to their fullest potential. We have 109 years of experience now to go on, and we know it works. But like any scientifically designed method, when you compromise the inputs, you compromise the results. As accredited, or in the language of AMI, they call it recognized schools, our programs must meet rigorous standards that hold the schools accountable to that scientifically designed method. The standards include teachers who are trained through AMI training programs. It's a rigorous training program with over 900 hours of training that focuses on observation, educational and developmental theory, and then supervised practice teaching, of course. And throughout that course, the teachers create their own albums with the pedagogy and instructions on using the materials that serve as their guides for the application of Montessori in the classroom environments. The AMI accreditation also dictates a full set of Montessori materials in the classroom. These materials are designed to meet the developmental needs of the child at that age. They're didactic, they're scientific, they're self-correcting, and they're instrumental to the child's discovery and learning. It requires mixed-age classrooms in age groupings that aid the development of children. So for infants and for toddlers, that's about a 16-year age spread. For preschool age, it's a 3-year age spread. And as you saw in the video clip and the pictures being shown, the multi-age community provides opportunities for peer teaching, for socialization, and it supports the children in developing their leadership skills and interdependence as a community of learners. The classroom sizes are also prescribed by AMI, and as well as the adult-to-child ratios. And this provides opportunities for independence. Having larger classrooms and fewer adults, children are able to explore, to concentrate, and develop themselves rather than relying on the direction from the adults at all times. As AMI schools, we are also held to a daily schedule that includes long, uninterrupted periods of work time so that choice, concentration, and focus are all supported by these periods. The accreditation process is lengthy. To become an AMI recognized school, we go through a paperwork phase, which includes providing the AMI consultant with paperwork on school policies and procedures, our employee and parent handbooks, our school plans, the square footage, staff training, all of that is reviewed and approved by AMI. And then once that's approved, they send out a consultant who then spends at least a day or more at the school, depending on how many classrooms at each level, and in the classrooms. And they evaluate the teacher and the classroom for adherence to the Montessori principles and how the room is supporting the children. The whole school is evaluated at that time. So if there's an outside agency that we report to, that is verified by AMI. There's administrative and board structures are overseen, as well as the family support systems in the school are evaluated. If the standards are met, we're accredited. If not, then there's a timeline and a plan put in place and a revisit before accreditation would be given. Currently, our ability to fully implement the Montessori method and meet these rigorous standards and provide the greatest opportunities to children is hampered by the dual regulations from the Department of Human Services, which licenses the child care programs, and the Department of Education, which oversees our elementary and junior high programs at our schools. We spend significant time just making sure that we're meeting the standards and reporting to both organizations, and then reconciling the differences between those organizations and the AMI standards. As educational environments, our mission and goals are more closely aligned with the Department of Education. The regulations for child care centers conflict with the accreditation requirements from AMI, and this is true for the materials that are in the environment. The DHS requirements are around things like stuffed animals and blocks. Our materials in our classroom are real, and we give real experiences in the classroom. So rather than pretending to do something, our children get to actually do it. Other examples are simple, things like the billboards to hang art, but they're complex in their effects. In our classrooms, we don't hang up children's work because we want to honor the process that children have. Children make great strides. They learn to read. They learn how to tie their shoes. They learn how to help a friend, and all of those processes are just as important as a work that produces a product. DHS requires us to have smaller group size and to have a smaller age range than is prescribed by AMI, and that we know is important to making these classrooms work. We're not offering a full Montessori environment if we don't have those larger group sizes and that full age range of children in the classroom. The adult-to-child ratio is also in conflict. In a Montessori environment, we're working to support a child's independence. And if you have children of your own, you know the more adults in the house, just like in a classroom, the more dependent children become. We want to give them that opportunity to be independent and solve their own problems. We also have a unique situation in that two-thirds of our classroom is returning each year, and we operate on a school calendar. Whether that be a 10-month calendar or it's a full year calendar, it's still an academic year that children are at our program. So this provides a consistency and a higher level of functioning in these classrooms. These are just a few examples of the differences between the requirements from DHS and AMI. There are a couple of others in the materials in your packets. Right now, we must obtain waivers and spend time educating licensors on the Montessori philosophy. It takes substantial administrative time to figure out how to make Montessori fit within the DHS guidelines, and requires us to sacrifice within the classroom environment and adjust our programs or curriculum to meet those requirements. Understanding that Montessori has the strongest outcomes when it's applied fully, our time is best spent on executing programs that support children towards their optimal development. With the goal of the unsession to reduce unnecessary burden, Representative Yaruso and the AMI school saw this session as a perfect time to introduce a bill to streamline regulation. Moving oversight for AMI-recognized schools from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Education. So as Representative Yaruso described, the bill exempts the AMI-accredited schools from Minnesota Statute 245A, the DHS licensure, and moves us to operate to get approval to operate and oversight under the Department of Education. It maintains all the important requirements around health and safety, food and water, care for children with special needs, emergency and accident reporting, and facility requirements that are found in Rule 3 already, as well as background checks on all employees, volunteers, and contractors, and requirements for state and local fire codes must be met, and it also requires us to submit a three-year plan to the Department of Education to ensure our compliance with all these requirements. While many of the requirements remain in force, fewer masters means less administration, which means more time spent on education. thank you for considering the bill before you today and for giving us the opportunity to speak with you and present our solution.
Thank you. Ms. Davis?
Yes. I am Ms. Davis.
Hello.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. State your name and then...
My name is Liza Davis. I am Coordinator of Special Programs at the Montessori Center. I'm just here to support, offer additional support.
And then Ms. Anderson, are you just for support or...
No, I'm here to answer questions. I don't have anything prepared,
okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, fine. Then Representative Meyer has a question.
Mr. Chair, since this bill seeks to put Montessori's under direct MDE authority, should the bill be going or referred to education policy?
Representative Myra, we got instructions that goes to HHS policy. They can, if education wants it after that, then they can get it after HHS. We don't control where it goes after the. We can send it to one committee, then they decide what to do with it, whether to send it to the floor or to another committee.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Russo.
The Education Policy Committee is aware of the bill, but as the chair mentioned, since it's going to HHS policy next, they're waiting on it after that. But I fully expect that if it makes its progress through committees, that it would take a stop in both.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, then I guess the chair will renew his motion that House File 2176 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries resoundingly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
1-0, I think, or maybe 2-0. Okay.
Representative Mullery moves that House File 2095 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy.
Yes,
Representative
ma'am.
Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I would move Amendment A2, which I believe everybody involved, I think, met and figured out that this was the correct way to resolve all the issues that the committee brought up the last time, except for the one that Representative Moline brought up. And I'll later be moving A5, which deals with that particular issue that Representative Moline had. So with that, I would ask that the I will move A2 and ask to have that in so that the bill is in the order that the author wants.
All right. Representative Mullery has moved House File 2095 A2 amendment. Are there any questions about this? We'll just move this now. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Okay.
Thank
Representative
you, Madam
Mullery.
Chair. And Ms. Abderholden from the National Alliance on Mental Illness will explain the amendment and how it answers the questions that were brought up the last time.
All right. Ms. Abderholden, please introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. So the first one, page 3, lines 20 to 21, this was to address the concern of the counties that, you know, they wanted to, they could pay for the diagnostic assessments within, you know, the appropriated funds. And so we took that language out and then made it clear that if the family is underinsured or would cause financial hardship, the local social service agency may fund the assessment. So it's not a, it's not an unfunded mandate, but if they have the funds and feel that it's important to do so, they can. And then on line 27, we reinstated the screening results shall be considered private data. And I'm really sorry for kind of all the confusion and the discussion that happened at the last meeting. There's no one more than me that wished it had been more clear. But we had figured that because of the information ahead of that, that it was all covered, that it was just duplicative. But we will keep that in to just make it very clear that this is private data. And then, continue to take out, and the commissioners shall not collect individual screening results because those would be, you know, part of the social service record. And then after, on line 29, just putting the period after how the funding is used, so that it can be, you know, more general data, and this takes care of the concern of the counties as well, so that they didn't like the words and services and supports under the program. They wanted to just keep it very clear in terms of how many children then, you know, how they use the money in terms of diagnostic assessments. So that would take care of the concerns of the county, the counties.
All right. Are there any questions about this?
Okay. Then, if then I would move A5 to clear up the issue. Of,
we will have A5 passed out right
oh,
now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Pardon?
Do we vote on the A2 prior to going moving to the it, A5? We haven't voted on the A2, have we?
Yeah, we did vote.
We
on
had it. Added it to the bill as a whole. Yes.
That's the standard procedure to put it in the shape that the author wants the bill, and then we vote it in there. So it's on right now. And that's my motion, is to put A5 on to get it in the shape the author wants. And this is to deal with Representative Moline's issue, so that provides clearly that the purpose of this amendment is to make sure that what's already the law is my understanding, the department does not use it at all on licensing, and this just makes clear that they can't use it for licensing. That's the purpose of this. So I would move again the A5 amendment.
Okay. Ms. Abderholden, do you have some comments on that one, or is that you have some?
Well, just to get it in the shape the author wants.
All right. Do we have to on that? We just put that in. We don't have to vote on that, right?
No, we do vote on it.
Okay, all of those in favor of Amendment A5, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Thank you. Okay. We have this amendment before us.
And now the bill is in the shape that the author would request, and I think I already explained A5, and that it's a really simple one to deal with, that the licensing cannot use that info, and they apparently they can't anyhow under other law, but this clarifies it here. And then Ms. Abderholden has explained A2.
Okay, so then I guess we're ready for committee questions.
Yes.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the only question I have is, how long are you going to retain the data? I guess that hasn't been clarified. That's the only question I have remaining from yesterday, from our last meeting, was how long are we going to retain the data? Are we going to delete it after 18 years or 20 years? Are we going to keep this data for into perpetuity forever?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's treated as all other human services data. The aggregate data, you know, there's no names, you know, to it, so that we can keep, you know, forever. How the SSIS system works is, you know, as a mystery to many of us, including me. I don't know how long that data. I wonder if someone from the county, since they have to use that system all the time, if they know how long that data is kept. It's a record. Do you know how long?
Madam Chair, Representative, so the way it works for this population is because under Medicaid, up to 21, and then there's a six-year audit responsibility by the federal government. So up to 27 would be the maximum age for this data.
Could you please state your name for the record?
Bill Weiss from Children's Mental Health at DHS.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. I think that we have Representative Meyer wants to add another amendment.
Yes.
Madam Chair and members, I have the A3 amendment. What the A3 amendment does is reinstates the requirement that parents opt in to consenting to their children to be screened rather than the new language requiring an opt out. And Madam Chair, I would like a roll call.
Okay. That's 3-6. Okay. Do we have some comments, Ms. Abderholden?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And I know this is, as I mentioned to Representative Myra, sometimes friends disagree on things. When this was changed back in 2011, there was actually no data to say why we needed the change. We had not heard complaints from families. Families had opted out when they didn't want to. And there is just a, it's not like people like go to court. There's actually a simple form that they fill out, which I do have here. Here it is. So this is the form that they get handed, and they literally sign it saying they want to opt out. So it's a pretty easy thing for families to do. I want to make it really clear that a screening tool is not a diagnosis. It's not a diagnostic assessment. I do kind of compare it to a thermometer. You know, if your temperature is up, it tells you that your temperature is up, but it doesn't tell you why you're sick. Or even if you're really sick, it just is kind of a warning sign, and then you need to go further on. The screening assessment is, that's all it does, is it says there's some red flags here, and then you go to the family gets to take that information and decide, do they want to get a diagnostic assessment or not? Do they want to get treatment for their child? And it really is their decision. You know, I'm a firm believer in the public health approach, which is you want to make sure that families are given this information. Kids who end up in the juvenile justice system are extremely at risk for a mental illness. And we know that for any healthcare condition, the sooner that you identify and treat, the better the outcomes. And so this is really what this is. Again, when it was in place before, we didn't have complaints. There weren't any concerns raised to us. And we have had juvenile justice folks, this is, came out of that group, say, you know, now we have judges ordering it. It was just, you know, it was easier for families just to opt out if they really felt strongly about it. And, you know, families are then given that information, and they can decide what to do for their children.
Representative Myron, do you have more comments?
No, we can go to a vote.
Is there anybody else who wants to comment on this? Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm just going to comment from a broad perspective as a longtime school board member that opt-in surveys are really problematic overall in terms of their effectiveness in assessing a population. And opt-out definitely provides a better database for a population. So I just strongly support opt-out unless there's particular circumstances that would where you're looking for a very limited sample.
Okay, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also would oppose the amendment. I went to all of the meetings of the working group that was created by our statute last year, and it was unanimous to put this language back in the way it always was before that aberration happened a few years ago. And so I would strongly recommend that against this amendment, everyone, there were parents on that working group who were very strong for parental rights, and they had no problem with this.
Thank you. And I would just call attention to the fact that when a child is found to be delinquent or found to have committed a juvenile petty offense for the third or subsequent time, the court, or county agency must notify the parent or legal guardian before a screening of the potential health screening. So that seems like a particular situation and a must notify. So I'm satisfied with that. At this time, are there any further questions or comments? Let's take a vote on this amendment then, and we'll have a roll call.
Chair Mullery?
No.
Vice Chair Lane?
No.
Representative Myra?
Yes.
Representative Barrett?
Yes.
Representative Breinert?
No.
Representative Franzen?
Yes.
Representative Howell?
Yes.
No. Representative Grisha? No.
Yes.
Representative Moline?
No.
Oh. Eureka.
Representative Moran?
No.
Representative Radinovich?
No.
And Representative Winkler? Representative Winkler?
All right, Representative Winkler is excused. The vote is 5-4 and 6 against. The motion does not pass. The amendment does not pass. All right, are there any other things to come before us at this? Any other amendments at this time? Any other comments from the committee? All right, at this time, Representative Mullery renews his motion that House File 2095 be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee. All those in favor? Is that the motion that we have before us?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, that it be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Policy.
Okay. Right. And with that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, next we have House File 2224. Representative Mullery moves that the House File 2224 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy Finance. I'm Health and Human Services Finance Committee. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is another bill that came out of the working group that was created by statute that actually was started in our committee last year. And with me today, again, Sue Abderholden will be the lead-off in explaining the bill.
Okay. Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. This bill was actually modeled after the ACE program, which started in Ramsey County. There are other counties that have similar types of things. And what it really is about prevention. My background is actually in public health, and so when we think about, you know, how do we prevent illnesses, it becomes kind of difficult to think about how do you prevent mental illnesses. Well, we can't really do primary prevention because we really don't know all the different causes for mental illness, especially in children. But we can do better in terms of secondary and tertiary prevention. Secondary prevention is really looking at when we know someone is at risk for developing a certain illness. And what we know is that children who have been exposed to trauma, have abuse and neglect, or have a family history of mental illnesses are far more likely to develop one. And so we can be providing some intensive intervention at that point. Tertiary prevention would be when we have when we know someone has developed a mental illness, but what we want to do is make sure it doesn't become a disabling condition. And so what the ACE program really is kind of secondary and tertiary, and it's really targeting children who are at extreme risk or have already developed a mental illness. They have come to the attention of sometimes law enforcement, you know, teachers and others who are saying, this child's, you know, behaviors and symptoms are really way outside the norm. And many of these children, if they were older, would end up in the juvenile justice system, so this is a way to really intervene much earlier. The legislature actually passed funds back in 2009, I believe, to support the program. Then, of course, we hit the recession. But if we, again, want to start looking at more prevention programs, this is really ideal in terms of making sure that children don't end up in the juvenile justice system. And I think I'll turn it over so that you can talk more in depth about the program.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Darren Tobold. I'm from Ramsey County Commissioner Reinhardt's office. And I'm here. I was on the design committee for All Children Excel. Really excited to be here today to share a lot of our success story. And I do have a handout here. I'm sorry. I just sort of walked in. Can I meet you, Peter? Sorry. Thank you. So All Children Excel, we had, in Ramsey County, we're seeing, as Sue pointed out, I mean, just there's from law enforcement as well as school and other community agencies, a really deep end population, and we were trying to figure out how to address that, and it came out of the idea of trying to figure out in the secondary prevention that there's, it's multi-jurisdictional, that we see these kids in the criminal justice system, but as well as in mental health. They have caseworkers, they have myriad of social services agencies involved in these families. And so we wanted to do something that would focus around the child and around a pattern that creates healthy development. We did this. We've been doing it for we got money from the state in 2009, but we've been doing this for over almost 10 years now. And what we found out in the studies and all the research is that that a majority of them, the majority of these go over, do very well. After 5 years, we saw that 30% of the children in ACE reoffended, that were in the criminal justice system reoffended, but that's as compared to 83% of children that don't receive these sort of deeper end services. But also we found that it took 3.5 years to stabilize these kids, dealing very intensely with them and their family, multi-systemic therapy. It's definitely an investment, but it's an investment that pays off in very good outcomes. The multi-jurisdictional service coordination is key to the program. It exists outside of mental health or criminal justice or education. It is focused at all the different needs of the child. It's child-centered. And it's the multidisciplinary information system that can do this that we can, you know, sort of help in all different and coordinate services, you know, to get an effective outcome for that child. That and the intensive community work, but it is, like I said from the numbers, I mean, it does pay off in the end. So thank you for a chance to talk about it.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, thank you. I have a number of questions for the testifiers. Will participation be voluntary?
The bill, yes. Yes.
All right. Would you please elaborate, any one of you, on what you're envisioning these projects will be?
Do you want to answer?
Ms. Abderholden. It really is, it's really kind of built on the ACE project. And so, but we're not saying it has to be an ACE program, but it has to contain those elements because that's what the research has shown. It has been proven to be most effective in intervening with these children to make sure the trajectory of their lives goes in a much better direction. So there will be flexibility within that, but really looking at some of those evidence-based practices like multi-systemic family therapy.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, how will participants' privacy be protected under, on line 1.17, it talks about an integrated information system.
Well, Mr.
Yeah, I mean, the HIPAA, you know, there's, I mean, HIPAA does apply, and, okay. I mean, just as in all the different areas, you know, the data privacy rules and procedures apply.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further comments or questions?
Madam Chair, I just want. Oh, oops.
Representative Powell.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just reading in the brochure. It says that it takes into effect the into account poverty and violation data that comes from the history of the family. How do they gather that data that they know they've got an older brother, older sister, or a family member that's been involved in this type of activity? Where does that information come from?
Mr. Tobolt.
Well, currently in ACE, we would know they would have an open case if it's financial services that have an open case in human services. And they would also so that data would be there to their social worker.
Any further questions? Okay. Is there anybody in the public? Oh, Representative Mullery?
No, sure. I just wanted to explain that this bill basically builds on what the working group pretty much came to a unanimous approval of, the idea that in order to stop recidivism, the best way to stop that is to get the child early and provide them with other services and things that will keep them from falling further into the system and in getting them out of the conditions that were causing it. So that's the whole purpose of this, is a different approach rather than just the old, when they do something wrong, immediately lock them up. This is to try and stop and get a different route for the child.
All right. Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience from the public or from the departments who would like to add something to this? Okay. Well, with that, Representative Mullery renews his motion that House File 2224 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. With that, we are adjourned.